Human Services Budget Division is reconvened. I guess Mr. Kuntz wants to make a brief statement correcting his previous statement, so he could do that at this time.
Mr. Kuntz.
Mr. Kuntz?
I don't know if he heard you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Kuntz, did you have an additional comment to make?
Yes. My name's Dave Kuntz, and I just want to say for the record, if I misspoke earlier, I apologize for that. If this is insurance and they have an arrangement I was not aware of, I apologize for that.
All right, thank you. Mr. Griffith, did you still need to testify?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Phil Griffin. I represent Preferred One as well as other clients on a contract basis. And Senator Erickson Ropes called me yesterday, and her staff asked me to meet with them. I was tied up in a staff committee meeting, so we haven't had a chance to talk about the bill that's before us. But I just wanted to respond to the questions that were raised by Mr. Kuntz's testimony and the issue of the contract between Preferred One, my client, and UCARE relates back to the 1992 health care reform debate. At that time, we were just beginning our HMO, and at that time, it was the only community integrated service network in the state of Minnesota. In order for the PMAP program to meet the 1115 waiver requirements, that we have a choice of two plans in every county, we went into a joint agreement with UCARE so that they could use Preferred One's network to expand, and that way DHS could meet the requirement of the 1115 waiver and have PMAP expand statewide. We've continued that joint agreement and work with them to use our network in meeting our PMAP requirements of Preferred One. We still have a very, very small health plan, and that's the contractual arrangement that we have. We have not divided up any kind of geographic areas or marketplaces, and have continued to work with the department to meet those requirements. Madam Chair, if there are questions of any members, we'd be happy to address them, but wanted to be on the record for that.
Any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you both very much. I wanted to ask some questions of there's someone here from the Department of Commerce, I believe, and then if Ms. Peets is here from the Department of Human Services.
Madam Chair, I understand that there is someone from the Department of Commerce coming back, but they aren't here.
They aren't here yet? Okay. Is the Department of Human Services here yet? I realize when we say we'll be meeting 15 minutes after session, it's pretty hard for anybody to know what that means. Maybe we have one more bill on the agenda. Maybe we could just set this aside for a minute and take the other bill up and then come back to this and maybe.
Madam Chair, are we going to have an opportunity to ask some questions of Ms. Bruner?
Yes, we will. I just thought that we could complete the agenda and then take questions of anybody else. If there's questions, some of the questions might get answered along the way. Is Senator Torres Ray around?
Or maybe not.
Well, then I guess we won't switch to her bill yet. We'll just wait a minute. Maybe we could take some questions of Ms. Bruner while we're waiting. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Bruner, you mentioned that there was something in the bill that requires you, the health plans, to go in and do an accounting of administrative costs spent by health care providers. And I'm wondering if you could reference, because I looked at the bill and I didn't see any language that I thought could be interpreted that way. Could you tell me what you were referring to, please?
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, absolutely. On page 2, line 2.4 to 2.7, if I could just read it, payments by the prepaid health plan to unaffiliated third parties, that would be providers, or to providers or other entities that own or are owned or are under common control with the plan, and that I assumed would be something like an integrated group like Health Partners, which is both provider and payer, must be divided into patient care expenses and administrative expenses and included in the appropriate category for determination of the loss ratio. That's how I read that.
Senator Olson?
Well, Madam Chair, first I guess I would just like to say for the record that the administrative expenses caused by health plans in dealing with or insurance companies or anyone. I mean, there are administrative expenses on your end. There are administrative expenses on the part of the providers. And there are expenses that no one pays for that patients actually absorb in dealing with all the administration paperwork and so forth. And in fact, one small practice doctor testified in one of our committees that he estimated that 40% of his billing costs were related to having to the administrative costs that his office incurs in dealing with all the different billing forms, all the different requirements for pre-approval, and all the oversight that administrative plans require. And certainly those costs also get built into our healthcare system and become a part of what we all end up paying for. But that being said, I really don't read this the way you're interpreting this at all. It seems to me that this is a requirement that the health plans have to include costs they are paying that would be for the category of administration versus the category of care. There's nothing in this that I read that would say that there's any reporting requirement coming back again from the provider. It doesn't say that at all.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, the way the language is written, I believe this is a logical interpretation. And if that's not true, if my reading is wrong, then I think some clarification of the language is needed because I don't understand it. But it says payments by the plan to an unaffiliated third party, or the other clause, payments to them must be divided. So the claim payment must be divided into patient care and administrative expenses and included in the appropriate category for determination of the loss ratio. So I think a plain reading of it could be that interpretation. I mean, I think that's fair, and if that's not the intent, then I think an amendment to clarify what the meaning is would be in order. I would also say, with respect to your comment regarding the provider, I think I totally agree with you. Administrative costs are throughout the system, and what we know is that those costs have to be paid one way or another. They get shifted around. One of the things that the legislature has done to address this issue in the last couple of years in some of the reform initiatives was to move to electronic claim filing. And we've had a common, we're doing a common claim form in Minnesota now. It's submitted electronically. Information is available on remittances. I mean, the hope, I think, always was that we could wring some additional admin expenses out, and hopefully we'll begin to see some of the result of that.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
I would disagree with your statement that administrative costs necessarily have to be paid one way or the other. I think it depends on what we're talking about, and when we have the kind of system that the healthcare plans have, where only they are defining and quantifying what the need for health administrative expenses is going to be, and that's exactly what we're trying to get at here. Now, if I decide that I want to have 20 people overseeing a healthcare doctor to determine the type of care that's going to be delivered in a facility, as opposed to one person doing that job, because I'm deciding how much oversight is needed, and I'm going to call all of that administrative cost, and I'm going to do that in the name of somehow controlling costs, but I've now spent as much or more than the doctor would have spent providing the care. That is an example, perhaps, an overly simplified example, but an example of why we can't just let health plans make those determinations with no accountability or no ability to look deeply at how those decisions are being made, because a great deal more money can be held back for administrative costs that some people might not think are necessary to grow the business on the management or administration side and prevent money going for the healthcare delivery side. That's what we're trying to get at here.
So I'm going to take that as a statement, not a question, and I'm going to ask if Ms. Peed can come up to the table now.
Madam Chair, on that topic, may I make a statement?
Certainly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in Senator Marty's committee, several of the members here may recall that we had this conversation with Ms. Bruner about other providers having to do the breakdown. And we did clarify in that committee that was not the intent of this legislation. In fact, it was not what the bill said. And I believe at that time Ms. Brenner said, I must have misread this paragraph. So,
well, Senator, I think people are just saying if that isn't the intent, perhaps there should be some clarification in the bill.
Could hear from the Senate counsel on what that sentence
means. Why don't
we
move on, and then we'll get to whatever amendments there are at the end of the questions and the presentation. So, Ms. Peed, I have a question for you. We have set the administrative costs in our health plan contracts at 6.6% of the total amount that's on the table for them to have as a part of their contracts. Is it possible for that to go any lower? Is there room for more administrative activities to be undertaken and or for that rate to come down?
Madam Chairman, I don't believe it's possible for that rate to go any lower. There are certain requirements that we have for oversight, certain duties that health plans have to perform in order to be certified as HMOs and to qualify under the federal regulations as managed care organizations. 6.6% is a very low percent compared to percentages that are allowed nationwide. I think on the face of it, at this point in time, it's unlikely that it could go lower.
So, Ms. Peed, this bill would require more administrative costs on the part of health plans, would it not?
Madam Chair, yes, it would. It will require the managed care organizations essentially to keep two sets of books, one under GAAP's accounting and one as required under their regulatory provisions.
And so how would they be able to absorb that within the 6.6% if we can't go any lower?
Madam Chair, I don't have a good answer for that. I suppose that we will have to look very closely at what additional administrative duties the department can relieve them from, which may mean that we will be in a difficult position in being able to monitor and its potential that it could put us at risk with meeting federal requirements.
Senator Berglund?
Ms. Peed, how do you make sure that the plans are living within the 6.6%?
Madam Chair, the 6.6% is an aggregate figure.
It's an average.
It's
right.
an average. So
I
some
understand
of,
that,
right.
but you still would have to make sure that the average is staying beneath that. So how do you make sure that's happening?
Madam Chair, we monitor the Health Department and Department of Commerce financial reports. Health plans do a standard set of reports every year. There's a special summary that we use to monitor administrative costs.
And do you require that the plans produce audited statements of their expenditures to you?
Madam Chair, the Department of Human Services does not have a separate audit requirement, except in the case where there's a dispute over payment. The audit requirements are already in place through the Department of Health as the regulator, and in an effort to the legislature has been very clear to the Department of Human Services that we needed to streamline our administrative requests and not have duplicate requests. So we do not have a separate audit process.
But there is an audit process that you rely on.
It's my understanding that they produce audited statements for the Department of Health and Commerce.
Department of Commerce.
Are there other questions of Ms. Peed, Senator Lynch?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have three questions. My first question is, currently we use the statutory accounting principles, and that those are the same measures that the federal law requires. So I'm wondering if there are other states that utilize GAAP principles for their health plans.
Madam Chair,
take these one at a time,
Senator
maybe.
Lynch, thank you. Easier for me to keep track. I am not aware of other states that use GAAP accounting. There may be some. I don't know.
Other questions for Ms. Peed? Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, thank you. An inference was made that we don't have mechanisms in place to adequately review and analyze administrative expenses within our health plans for our public programs. And I'm sure in health policy there was testimony to suggest that there are, in fact, any number of reports that are produced, that are put together. And one of the suggestions that I shared with Senator Erickson Ropes after the health policy stop was that in light of that and in light of the fact that perhaps keeping one set of books might be preferable and conforming to federal standards might be helpful, I wonder if there are it made me think if there are changes or modifications or further detail that should be or could be required as part of those reports or those auditing processes. Was it kind of a question that I had? And I'm wondering if, Ms. Peed, if you could speak to that a little bit.
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, there was a requirement from legislation that was passed a couple of years ago for the Health Department to do a study, and they, through the Department of Commerce, a contract was procured to review the health plan's reporting of administrative costs. The results of that report indicated that all of the managed care organizations are using reasonable methods to allocate their administrative costs. They're not all identical. But in order to produce detailed recommendations, the report said that it would be necessary to fund additional resources, probably in terms of a contractor, to meet with plans and the department to determine what would be the best method. And if I had money in my pocket, that's certainly something that I would look at spending it on.
Well,
we have
heard a bill that would do that, and we have laid it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. So,
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm happy to hear that.
Are there other questions, Senator Lynch?
Final question, Madam Chair. Has there been a situation where a plan has exceeded the 6.6%? And if that were to be the case, what would be the course of action?
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, there is these smaller health plans with smaller amount of enrollment tend to have higher administrative costs. It's simply a fact of life that if you have hundreds of thousands of enrollees as opposed to tens of thousands of enrollees, you have a larger field across which to spread your administrative expenses. And if you have other lines of business, you can also acquire efficiency there. The smaller plans, particularly those that are affiliated with counties through county-based purchasing or as county health plans, are they don't have those additional lines of business, and those efficiencies are not open to them. This bill, as proposed, would put those plans constantly at risk of some kind of penalty, or at least they would be held to a separate standard.
County-based purchasing has been exempted from the bill. So I guess the question is there anybody else that exceeds the 6.6%?
Madam Chair, Metropolitan Health Plan has exceeded the 6.6%. Again, they don't have other business across which I can just lean on this. They don't have other business on across which to spend to spread that, and so they don't have access to the efficiency that some of the larger plans have. However, they are a health maintenance organization. Madam Chair, they are a health maintenance organization through their licensure. They're not county-based purchasing as defined in the statute.
Okay. Other questions? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess other than county, one of the questions I had was that differential. What would be the lowest amount of administrative costs that would be reported by any of the plans?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I would have to look that up. Typically, the larger plans are, including their taxes, are in the nature of I want to say 6 or 7%, or 7%, 7.5%. I would have to look that up and get back to you. I don't want to misrepresent.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson, maybe someone from the health department can answer that question when they get up here.
Because I thought the question was just asked whether anyone exceeded it, and I thought your answer was only this one other plan, but now you've just said the larger ones are in the neighborhood of 7.5%, so that seems contradictory unless I was misunderstanding you.
Well, the 6.6%, Senator Olson, has things added to it. So taxes are added to it, and if we increase the taxes for some reason, then that would be automatically added to it. So,
well, Madam Chair,
I'm talking about the administrative expenses that are not fees or taxes or other things that are imposed by the state to be paid.
Well, Madam Chair, I understand that, but I didn't sound as though we were talking about two different things here. We didn't say we were. Sounded like we were talking about all the same things. So if there was a difference in one standard or how we're looking at one group than the other, I guess I missed that.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I apologize. I wasn't clear. I was speaking of an aggregate figure that included taxes.
So,
Senator Olson.
So again, to be clear, Madam Chair, if we are looking at all of the plans and this requirement of 6.6%, as comparing the plans, I'm looking for the range, who's below, who's above, and, that I think that's what we're all trying to get at, clearly, an answer to that question.
the
Ms. P.
The I'm sorry, Madam Chair. The individual from the Department of Commerce reminds me that total administrative costs also includes commercial costs. I thought I was speaking to public programs, but I will look that up and provide that information.
Madam Chair, that's exactly to one of our points in the bill, that they're looking at aggregated averages that commingle public dollars for public programs with the private insurance market. And unless we can track the public dollars spent on public programs, we're never going to know where the expenses are. We're never going to know what Minnesota is spending because it's mingled with all the data from commercial markets.
Madam Chair.
Well, Senator, the cap that was set last year in our omnibus bill was for the public book of business only.
Madam Chair, the department is able to track public programs separately.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Well, then, Madam Chair, if we have that information, we should be able to get it, I would think, since that's the subject of the hearing and certainly one of the questions that would be anticipated to be asked, because the point would be that if some can do this for less, then it probably doesn't have to be a 6.6% dollar figure. I mean, if we're being told that there's no room to go any lower, but some are, in fact, lower, that's what we should know. Why,
Senator Olson, I think she said she could get that information for us. Maybe she can do it while we have other witnesses testify. Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would we be able, from the kind of accounting we are doing now, to know, for example, be able to pull out the figure to know what percentage of administrative costs represents the amount being spent on pre-approving care, for example, or paying for reinsurance, for example, or negotiating rates, for example, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, would we be able to tell from the accounting practices that are being used now how much is being spent on different kinds of administrative functions so that we could look at their cost effectiveness and know whether they are adding value to the system?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, the reports that I look at do not include that level of detail. However, the legislature did give the department authority to collect certain data, which we are in the process of doing around service delivery costs and vendor costs. So we may have some additional information in that regard at the end of 2010.
Senator Olson, are you done? There are other people on the committee that want to ask questions.
That was my question, Madam Chair, and I think she just answered it.
All right. Senator Coring?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Erickson Ropes, I'm still trying to decide whether I'm going to vote yes or no, and being the only one on the committee with only a high school education, can you explain this to me, why we need this? You know, I go home and tell my constituents that sometimes I think that they'd be better off just to pay us to stay home because we're passing more rules, more regulations, more laws, and it just piling on. And I'm wondering why. Can you just explain to me why we need this? What is the reason? I still can't fathom if an HMO is going to have two set of books, and if we're doing something different than the federal government requires. Why are you doing this? Is my question.
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Madam Chair and Senator Coring, thank you very much for the question. I think one of the easiest ways to explain this is if you look at the chart in all the paperwork that I handed out to you, that's this triangular chart. Here's the question about why are we even going down this road? The question is, what happens to $3 billion of public taxpayers' money when we're dealing with public health programs? The legislature turns over about $3 billion for public programs to various HMOs or health plans to deliver health care to Minnesotans. And we want to know where the money goes, where it winds up, how much is spent on administration, how much actually gets out to the patient. We want to establish a loss ratio which says we want at least 93-some percent to go to the patients and direct care. And you can keep 6.6 for administration and that sort of thing. But we want the bulk of the public tax dollars to go where it's giving the benefit for health care to people on the ground. We don't have a system that tracks that right now because the department does not use gap accounting for this program. Every other organization that engages in a state contract with Minnesota, and I said this earlier, whether it's spreading gravel or if it's a private company that buses school kids around or the people that built the new bridge, uses gap accounting. That means you open up your books at the end of the project and we can look at how much was spent on steel and contracts for cement and that sort of thing. Everyone uses gap accounting. It's the same system across the state. It's open and transparent. There's a high level of accountability. Every division uses this. In fact, one of my questions is for the department. I'll bet the department uses gap accounting for other purchases and other contracts. There's only one sliver that does not use gap accounting, and that's the insurance companies that, you know, are the brokers for all of this health care money. My bill just says you play by the same rules as everyone else. Open your books, use gap accounting like everyone else, so we can track the public's money. It's $3 billion worth of public money. I think our constituents want us to say we're tracking where it goes. And so my bill says you use the same accounting system as everyone else. And I did get a little yes to my question. So
you got to know.
We
don't use gap accounting.
Okay, so if the department doesn't use gap accounting and people are worried about what are we going to do with this new accounting system, well, we could probably send over some people from the Department of Transportation or department, any of the other departments, to show them how to use gap accounting because the entire everybody else uses it. So it's a way to open the books and provide accountability and transparency. If it costs a little bit extra money, if we have to spend a penny to track a public dollar, that's okay. But the fiscal note says it won't even cost us a penny. It says zero cost. So
I think it said they couldn't determine the cost.
Yes, after two fiscal notes.
Which is different than saying there is no cost.
Well, it doesn't say millions of dollars as well, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair,
Senator Cornyn?
I just had another thought, and if there's somebody from Lutheran Social Services here, I don't mean to pick on you. It's just that, you know, Lutheran Social Services provides a lot of services that we fund, and I'm just wondering how do we track what they're doing? Do we do that, Madam Chair? You probably know the answer to that question. I mean, how do we, when we give them money and they're providing services, how do we know that they're spending that on that?
I think the department requires every contractor to have audits, mm-hmm. That are done of their books.
And really?
Then those audits are made available to the department.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, Madam Chair, in terms of the audits for these programs, Senator Cornyn, the audits are done by the Commerce Department on the insurance companies to make sure that they're profitable and they're solvent companies and that they may be getting grade A's, doing really well in their audits as an insurance company. That has nothing to do with how they're managing the public's dollars over here as a broker for third-party administration of health programs. That is not audited by the insurance or by the Commerce Department. Only the fact that the insurance companies are healthy and profitable, making money for their shareholders.
Well, the audits go beyond that. The audits look at loss ratios to make sure they're complying with those things. It also looks at making sure that the funds are being expended on services rather than being put in somebody's bank account.
Madam Chair, I think that's correct for the commercial products, not for the public health programs.
No, I think it's done for both of them.
Madam Chair, I just have one other question.
Senator Cornyn?
Senator Erickson Ropes, do you think that somebody's doing something wrong? Is that why you're doing this?
I think it's in the best interest of the legislature to make sure we know where the public dollars are being spent. And this system, used by other divisions, provides open transparency and accountability. Why would we not want to look under a $3 billion rock to see if it's if things are working well?
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I have a series of questions as well. I'll just do a few and then let others get in on it. But
are they for Ms. Peed? Because she stepped away from the table. And that was what I was asking for.
Yeah. You want us to stay focused on questions for her?
Yes. Okay. And then we'll go on and we'll have some other people and we might have questions for them also.
Okay.
So maybe Ms. Peed can.
Would you return? Thank you, Ms. Peep. I guess I'm trying to get at a disagreement that seems to be here about whether or not the process we have adequately allows us to make certain that what the department contracts with these companies to manage this money, the process that you use adequately allows us to make certain that public dollars are spent as intended. I think that's the essence of what we're trying to get at here today. And so I can't tell from whatever anybody has said is that as you as a department engage in establishing the agreements about how that money is going to be managed by whomever, do you articulate clearly what can be counted under administration and what must be counted under services? Is that clearly defined in your contractual relationship?
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, we allow the health plans to report in the same way that they report as they're required to under their regulatory standards. However, when there is a question about whether something should be attributed to administration or to medical services, we provide that clarification. So if there's question of how certain services or activities should be treated, we do provide that clarification. I believe that the bill that is contemplating working together with stakeholders to clarify and articulate how that should happen would provide a great service to that as far as being consistent from plan to plan. But the external review indicates that there's nothing wrong going on. Where we have questions, though, we have clarified.
Senator Sharon, this bill doesn't define administrative expenses either, so I'm assuming if this bill were to pass, we'd be using the same methodology for collecting what those costs are from the health plans. Do you have more questions, Senator Sharon?
I'll pass to Senator Rosen.
Okay, Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Sharon. Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and to the witness. Under the assumptions on the fiscal note, DHS is not able to estimate a fiscal impact from this proposal. And that's been very clear that we aren't sure at how much this is going to cost. And that's troubling to me. But my question to you is, when DHS does contract with the health plans, what is the assumption on the margin?
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, we make an assumption each year on what the health plans will be able to contribute to reserves. At one time, we thought that they ought to be able to contribute something between 1.5% and 3%. When we take into consideration interest income and other income that's available to them, the number becomes much smaller. And what we've targeted has typically been in the 0.5% to 1.5% in aggregate across the programs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And
Rosen.
I'm sorry, what's your last name? Mrs. Peed?
Ms. Peed.
Okay, thank you. That's not a very large margin for a company of any size to be making a profit, and that's exactly what they are supposed to be doing is you're not in this to, it's just not a volunteer business. But if you're looking at the bill here at 93.5% mandated, and you look at the 6.6% administrative cost, that is not in here, but it's assumed, and then the 1.5% on taxes or that's being assessed. So basically, my math figures out that we're mandating them to have a 1.6 loss on this bill, on their margins. Am I wrong?
Speed.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I apologize because I'm a little confused between what's in the House bill and what's in the Senate bill. In the House, there was clarification that the loss ratio that taxes would be removed from that loss ratio, even though they weren't included in the administrative expense. I would comment, though, that the 93.5% is very tight, and it doesn't offer much comfort or much room for error to the department in setting rates or for a plan if their risk suddenly changes because they have higher risk or lower risk enrollees. So this is a target that I think will put many plans at risk of penalty from time to time.
Madam Chair, do you understand my math on that?
Yes, I understand.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Lynch, did you have a question for Ms. Pete?
Senator Berlin, I was going to just summarize.
Okay, well, if you don't have a question for Ms. Pete, I'd like to see if anyone else does. And if no one else does, I'd like to move on to Jackie Gardner from the Department of Commerce. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Pete. Is it still the case that the department is considering the cost of the insurance company reinsuring itself against the risk of loss to be a health care medical cost as opposed to an administrative cost?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, we don't make that breakdown. If you would direct that question to Ms. Gardner, I think that would be helpful.
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
When you say we don't make that breakdown, who do you mean we don't?
Madam Chair, I mean the Department of Human Services.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Gardner?
Good afternoon. My name is Jackie Gardner. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Commerce Department, and my responsibilities involve solvency oversight and financial reporting of all entities doing an insurance business in this state. There's been a lot of talk this morning about GAAP versus SAP accounting, and I'd like to clear up two main things. Statutory accounting is not new. It was around before health plans were around. Health plans got added to that concept when they organized in the late 70s and 60s. I've been doing statutory accounting and regulatory accounting for 38 years. I started when I was 2. Anyway, I'd like to open up this discussion a little bit about stat versus SAT with one question for this committee. Does anyone in this room want their claim paid with a chair, a piece of steel, a ream of paper? Statutory accounting does not allow companies to take value in that in determining how much they have available to pay claims. Statutory accounting is very conservative. It is a cash basis accounting, and it helps regulators as well as investors understand what a company's financial health is in regards to its ability to pay its claims. That is what the goal of an insurance entity is to do: pay claims, collect money, pay claims. That's what they do. We make sure they do that. It isn't the basis of accounting that determines that. Statutory accounting is very transparent. As a matter of fact, statutory accounting has its roots in GAAP accounting. Its statutory accounting is GAAP accounting that has enhancements and statutory additions to it. Statutory accounting was around all the time. The statutes decide how insurance companies report and record the value of their assets and liabilities, revenues, and expenses. So it's a basis of reporting, and it is very transparent, and it is not new. It has been around for over 40 years. It's a more conservative, it's much more advantageous to do it that way. To say that we don't audit entities and we don't audit the public program portion of the entity's operations is an untruth. We very much so do that. When we look at the strength and health of an entity, we look at it in its totality, not based on whether or not it has a breakdown of commercial or public programs. So we look at everything. We make sure that everything is consistent and everything is reported according to the instructions and according to compliance with the statutes that are in place. We put those statutes in place as a governmental body to make sure that insurance companies do report their assets on a basis that they can pay their claims. I'll be more than happy to entertain any questions from Mr. Kuntz, Ms. Erickson, or whatever about that. It's not a new basis of accounting. It's a reporting thing. I also wanted to make a comment about the fact that there was a study. The Department of Commerce and Health were engaged last year through Senate file, I think it was 2177 or something like that. I might have the number incorrect. But anyway, to determine the breakdown of administrative costs between public program business and private sector commercial business to make sure that there was not any cross-subsidization. What we did was determine that there were plenty of methods of computing administrative expenses, but the entities had always been able to use their own discretion as to what was an admin cost versus a health care cost. And that did not stop with a public program. That was in its entirety. The statutes did not define the categories of administrative costs for the health plans. That was not there. That may go back in time and history. I don't really know why. But there are categories of expenses that are reported on the financial statements that are filed with us. And to your question, Ms. Olson, we do know what reinsurance costs are, and there is reinsurance cost expense that are delineated on the financial statements, the statutory financial statements that are filed with the Health Department and with the Commerce Department. Okay. That's a uniform number expense that's across the insurance industry. And reinsurance cost is an insurance premium paid by an insurance company for insurance on its own risk.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
I know what reinsurance costs are, but my question was, that was one of the questions of different categories where I was wondering whether the public would be able to see that number, but then last question I asked with regard to that is, we had testimony from someone in Commerce in another committee setting that reinsurance was being looked at by Commerce as a health care cost as opposed to an administrative cost.
Correct.
And so my question is, so apparently that is still the way you're looking at it. The cost of the insurance company insuring itself against its own risk is being considered a cost of delivering care as opposed to administrative cost, which is hard for me to fathom why the Commerce Department would look at it that way. But I think the whole point of this is to get at those. I understand your point in saying that in terms of looking at the strength and health of the company for shareholders' purposes, that the system you're using works great for that. But it wasn't designed to get at the value in terms of the use of the money toward providing health care and looking individually at, just like you said, if you're in construction business, you're looking at pipes. If you're looking in the healthcare business, you're looking at, is it used to pay for a procedure or is it used for reinsurance? Those are the kinds of things that I think this bill is designed to get at, and I thought you made exactly the point for the need for the bill.
I'm sorry, you misinterpret.
Well, Madam Chair, I understand that's
Madam
not
Chair.
Your what you're trying to say, but that's what I was taking from it, because they're designed to do two different things.
And that's exactly a point. Excuse me, Senator Berglund, Madam Chair. That's exactly the point that I'm really trying to make. There's two different issues that are being crossed over here, a reporting issue versus a definitional issue. The statutes do not define what is an administrative cost. So the companies have their discretion into what they put into the administrative cost bucket and what is in the healthcare bucket. There is an argument to be made on both sides. Now, some companies take the position that the only business that we're in is delivery of health care. So everything we do is a health care cost. You can't have a nurse that writes up a prescription. You have to decide the time that she's spending logging in patients versus the time she's spending taking the temperature of a patient. Where do you draw the line as far as it's a health care cost versus an admin cost? And it can be made, an argument can be made that it's both.
Madam Chair?
And the definition does not reside in statute. So if I'm an HMO that says, I believe that this is a health care cost, and then another HMO says, I believe this is an admin cost because she's doing something other than direct delivery of a health care service, there's an argument to be made on both sides for that.
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Well, Ms. Gardner, if we're going to accept that argument, then I guess we might as well not even have loss ratios because they're totally meaningless if the insurance company has the discretion, as you've acknowledged they do, to just decide how they're going to categorize something, and then the department goes along with considering even the cost of insuring themselves against risk as a health care cost, which is really hard for anyone to decide how that would be what most people would think of as the cost of delivering health care. And so, to me, again, you're right, this bill doesn't actually do anything to define what's an administrative cost, but at least it's a step in allowing us to have something actually meaningful to work with in looking at how the insurance companies are using their discretion so that these loss ratios actually mean something.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, the basis of accounting does not dictate the definition of the admin expense. It could be a health care cost under GAAP as well as a health care cost under STAT. It's not the basis of accounting that dictates the definition of an admin versus a health care cost. And I'm speaking to the point that this bill does not achieve that particular goal of defining what is an admin versus a health care cost.
Right.
That's another bill.
I just
bill.
Remind people we've already heard a bill about that. So,
and I am part of that project. I was part of that.
Trying to do that bill over again. We're done with that bill.
Exactly. I was part of that project, and we've been now charged with coming up with the definition so that there will be a consistent in reporting what's in line one versus line two versus line three. But it's not whether it's GAAP or STAT. It's whether or not you define that as a line one expense or a line two expense. And that could be reported that way under either accounting methods.
So, Ms. Gardner, the reporting that is done today, is it made public so that people that are interested can go and see how?
The statutory financial statements are public, yes.
Right. So
they can be acquired either through the Department of Health or the Department of Commerce.
So if a provider group or a consumer group or anybody wanted to find out and compare health plans and
they can do
they
that.
They can get all that information from you now.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Are there other questions for Ms. Gardner? You have a question.
Yes, Madam Chair. And to your point, again, about getting to the accountability piece and being able to track it, all the reports that are online right now that have to do with statutory accounting address the financial health of the insurance companies. Is that correct?
That is all that a financial statement does, is report the financial condition of any entity, regardless of whether it's a health plan or any. That's all a financial statement does.
Right. Thank you very much. That's exactly what I needed to have answered, because these reports then that anyone would be looking at online only address the financial health of the insurance companies, not how they're managing the public health programs.
Ms. Gardner.
Chair, that is correct. But again, my purpose here is to make sure that everyone understands it's not the basis of accounting that dictates that. I understand what Senator Erickson is trying to get at. We're trying to get at what is included in a particular category of expense. But the basis of accounting will not get you there. That's not
Ms.
what.
Ms. Gardner, don't, when the health plans report to you their administrative expenses, is it possible for the public to get a copy of that?
I'm sorry. When they report their
administrative expenses, is it possible for the public to go look at what they what they are and what they've included in that category?
There are schedules and exhibits attached to the financial statement, and that's available as part of the financial statements as a whole. So there is a breakdown there. It's not as detailed as you may want it to be, but then you could always add more detail. But there is a breakdown of those totals that are on the basic balance sheet and revenue statement in the financial statement as a whole. There are schedules and exhibits that support the basic balance sheet and income statement.
Are there other questions for Ms. Gardner? Okay, thank you. Is there somebody from the Department of Health that can answer questions on this issue?
Madam Chair, committee members, Jim Golden from the Department of Health.
Mr. Golden, do the records that you get from the health plans differentiate between their public expenditures and their private book of business expenditures?
Madam Chair, yes, it does.
And is it possible for the public to access those records to find out how much is being spent administratively for public expenditures?
Madam Chair, committee members, we report on admin costs at an aggregate level that crosses both the public and the private. We don't report right now on the private sector, or I'm sorry, misspoke, just the public sector by health plan company. So we don't report that, but...
Do you have it?
We do have it. And
so we could ask you to report it if we wanted it?
Yes, we would simply need to provide the health plan companies a 21-day review, as is currently the law in Chapter 62J, and provide them the opportunity to comment before we publish that.
And we could do that without changing the way we do accounting?
Madam Chair, yes.
Are there other questions for Mr. Golden? Senator Sharon.
There's been discussion about a federal reform loss ratio legislation that's moving through at the federal level.
It's passed.
There was conversation earlier before we went to the floor about it being this loss ratio language being unnecessary because of the federal language. Is that true? What's your perspective on that?
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, I think the question depends a little bit on what you're asking, if it's about the minimum loss ratio or if it's about the data reporting associated with the minimum loss ratio. So in the federal health reform bill, there are minimum loss ratios, but those apply to the private sector plans and not to public programs. So with regard to who the minimum loss ratios apply to under the federal health reform bill, that does not apply to public programs. However, one of the things that is being done right now under the federal health reform bill is the data that is associated with the minimum loss reporting. And right now what has happened on that, first let me say that the Department of HHS federally is required to issue rules by the end of the calendar year with regard to reporting on three major categories, both what needs to go into those categories as well as methods to allocate to those categories. And the three categories specifically are on reimbursement for clinical services provided to enrollees, activities to improve healthcare quality, and then all other non-claim costs, which would be administrative costs, including an explanation of the nature of those costs, excluding taxes, licensing, or other regulatory fees. And so what is happening right now is they are looking at the way they put out a request for comments to try to understand what is happening with various health plans, various states around the country for that reporting. They are gathering those comments in anticipation of writing the federal rule, and then by the end of the calendar year, there will be rules that, again, regardless of the accounting system, divide up all expenditures into those categories. I think our thinking has always been that once those categories are there, once the accounting systems are structured around those categories, we would certainly want our reporting to be consistent with that And those are the types of things that we are both monitoring and providing comment on.
Any other questions for Mr. Golden? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, with respect to Ms. Gardner's comments, kind of leading us to the crux of the issue here, which is the difference between the two accounting systems and trying to get at breaking down these expense allocations. What is different about the two accounting systems in terms of the level of detail provided that would help us to get access to the kind of information that we all seem to want, as far as not just letting insurance companies decide that everything is a health care expense so that they don't have to count any administrative expenses, as it seems like they have the ability to do right now in our state. What's the difference in the accounting systems? Is it a level of detail, or what is it that's going to make it easier to get at that information with a GAAP accounting system?
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, I don't believe that I have the expertise to be able to answer that question. I would defer to the Department of Commerce and their financial auditors with regard to that. Though I guess what I would say, I think if I understood what Ms. Gardner was saying, is that it is not the accounting system that matters as much as the definition. So when you have expenditures that are for a particular purpose, it's really which bucket do you put them in. So under the federal law, there are three buckets. One is direct health care services to enrollees. One are activities to improve health quality. And then administrative costs. So any particular expense could, in theory, be put into one of those buckets. And so it's really a definitional issue of which is the appropriate bucket.
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess what I was understanding and having talked about the background of this bill is this. Even those three categories that you've just mentioned are very broad categories. And so, you know, there's still an awful lot of wiggle room even within those categories. And
well, that's why they're doing rules.
Well, exactly. So I understand, Madam Chair, that's why they're going to be doing rules. But the GAAP system itself seems to be more designed, and I'm not an accountant either, and I was hoping somebody could perhaps give the explanation of why that would be a better way of sort of counting the widgets, I guess you could say, of where the money's going, as opposed to just worrying about the health, overall financial health of the system, which seems to be what the other system is designed to get at.
Mr. Golden.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, maybe one thing that just would be helpful as some explanation, both with regard to what I think the federal government is trying to do, and perhaps just briefly what was also in Senator Dahl's bill. The issue, for example, on many of the administrative costs, and I think what Senator Dahl's bill was trying to do, was just to get uniformity. So, for example, right now in the reporting of administrative expenses, there are multiple legitimate ways to allocate the costs, and those are actuarially sound. They would pass the auditing tests. So, for example, you could do some type of allocation based on number of enrollees. You might do them on the number of claims. You might do them on the dollar volume of claims. As long as the system is coherent, your actuaries and your accounting firms will sign off on those. What I understood the goal of both Senator Dahl's bill and one of the goals of the federal system is to get to common methodologies of that allocation. And so I don't know that that actually depends at all on the accounting system. Again, I would have to defer to Commerce on that. But I think the methodologies, there are multiple methodologies, and many of these attempts are to get to standardizing those.
My understanding of the GAAP system of accounting is that it takes into account your inventory, your property, your automobiles that maybe you allow your staff to use when they deliver things. I mean, that's the difference, as I understand it, between GAAP and the other the accounting system that we are using today. Is that correct, Ms. Gardner?
If I may speak, yes, Madam Chair. Yes, gap accounting is a more liberal basis of accounting. It allows you to take value for things that are subjective. In other words, you can place a value on an asset and put that on your financial statement, and it's acceptable under GAAP. Under statutory accounting, we would not allow that. Under GAAP accounting, you can take a value for supplies and chairs and widgets and whatever else you think that has a value in computing your bottom line surplus or whatever. However, again, I ask you, when you get ready to pay a claim, do you want a chair? And that's not going to be the case. Statutory accounting does not allow an insurance company to take value for things that they cannot utilize to carry out their obligations under their contracts.
Other questions? Okay, is there anybody else that wanted to testify on the bill? Ms. Gardner?
If I may answer Ms. Olson's question about the does GAAP give you the buckets, as my previous testifier said, it's not the statutory versus GAAP that gives you the buckets. It's us determining what goes into that bucket. And that's part of Senator Dahl's bill that I'm a part of as well, is coming up to a common methodology so that you know that this bucket for any entity has these items in it versus saying all my admin items are in this one big bucket. We will now have 50 little buckets that you know that salaries are in one bucket and all salaries for nurses are in that bucket versus some of the salary for a nurse is in another bucket. This will give us an opportunity to know exactly what's in that bucket. All those methods are acceptable and they're fair and reasonable. However, we want something that is more standardized, so we will have a more consistent across the board, not just in Minnesota, but nationally and internationally, knowing that these buckets are where you'll put certain costs. And that's the project that we're doing under the Senator Dahl bill. But it's not the basis of accounting that determines that. It's us that's going to determine that as a separate issue. And then statutory accounting, they'll say, this is how you report that. The accounting is the reporting methodology, not the definitional thing.
Madam Chair.
Senator Erickson-Holmes.
Thank you. I prefer to get back to my bill, not Senator Dahl's bill.
I would, too.
Thank you. I just want to make a couple comments. We've heard, we're talking about the NAIC accounting and the GAAP accounting. And on one hand, we heard from Ms. Bruner about, you know, the wait and see, and I think we heard that from Mr. Golden, too. Let's wait and see about where the feds are going with this and take some direction from them. Just kind of wait. Don't pass any bills, you know. But on the federal level, I would point you to another one of the papers I passed out to you. This one says NAIC, so this is from the organization itself, the Center for Insurance Policy and Research. They are saying they're urging federal policymakers to preserve state oversight of health insurance and avoid preempting and superseding state consumer protections. So their own national position is let's let the states do this and don't interrupt where the states are. So, I mean, you can't have it both ways. NAIC can't say, don't do us, just wait for the feds, and then have also the national organization saying.
Senator, my understanding is that the states will still be monitoring and regulating and making sure that the loss ratios where they're set and how they're defined are adhered to. That regulation is still at the state level.
Right.
But they want federally to have some standards. So, you know, if you're Blue Cross Blue Shield of California, you can be compared as to what your administrative costs are compared to Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota.
I agree with you.
But it's still going to be regulated by the state in terms of making sure that there's compliance with the federal law.
Right. I agree with you, Madam Chair, but my point is that waiting for the feds to act is not even germane to this bill.
Ms. Gardner?
Madam Chair, I just had one comment on that. I think that there was sometimes people believe that because the word national is in NAIC, this is a federal agency. It is not. The NAIC is a consortium of state members. It's state-based regulatory group. The membership are the insurance commissioners of the 50 states and six United States territories and jurisdictions. It is not a federal agency. It is a state agency. Not a state agency, but it's a consortium of state agencies.
Is there anybody else that wanted to testify on the bill? Are there any more questions? Okay, I think we're ready to do whatever we're going to do next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to remind members that this bill is really about transparency and accountability, like every other division deals with moving towards a gap accounting. We did hear testimony today talking about the fact that the insurance companies and the people that do oversight over the public health plans really address totality, and it's not broken down between commercial and private health plans. There's a gap of information here, and during the current financial crisis that we're in, we cannot afford to not be looking at every single expenditure that the state makes. This is a huge block of money. We need to track the public dollars in a way that's open and transparent.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Erickson Ropes, you've indicated today your rationale and your reasons for supporting this legislation, and I just want to take a moment and offer a different opinion or different set of rationale and why I'm having difficulty supporting the legislation. And I'll try to be clear and succinct in my comments, but we do have, to be clear, we do have administrative expense caps for all of our public programs in the state of Minnesota. I think that's clear, I think that's transparent, and I think that part of the rationale behind that is to provide some checks and balance, if you will, in that. I've heard this bill, I think, at least in two different committees, and I'm not convinced that there's overall a problem with the administrative expenses or the level of administrative expenses that pertain to public programs in this state. My second concern has been well articulated in the testimony, and I will just simply say that I don't, I have serious reservations about creating another accounting system when I think much of our work in this division and frankly in the Senate has focused on administrative reduction and cost containment. So I think that's moving us in a direction that is contrary to that. My third reservation is that this bill as written permits providers to audit health plan books, and I just fundamentally think that that's problematic. My fourth concern, we talked about several hours ago, it seems, and that was that while I think it's perhaps humorous, and I hope that someday I'm the recipient of a fiscal note that is based on a donation, I think that's problematic. So, Senator Erickson Ropes, I'm having a hard time supporting your legislation today.
Madam Chair, can I respond to Senator Lynch on one point?
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lynch, I won't address all your points, but I'll just take one. And you're concerned about providers being able to look at open books and see what's going on. That already happens in the state of Minnesota with county-based purchasing. As you and I know, we tried to create Steadfast in southeastern Minnesota and worked really hard. The county-based purchasing groups in Minnesota comply with the data practices, Chapter 13, and they have public meetings, open records, open meetings. Everything's published. It's all open, and they're thriving very well. So competition in open books does not seem to be a problem for the very successful county-based purchasing groups.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Erickson Ropes, I'd just like to have a comment going back to my figures, because there was, I'm not sure if everybody understood that. The bill mandates 93.5%, and then you estimate a 6.6% in administrative cost. And then you have, and then there's a, taxes assessed at 1.5%. You add the 1.5 and the 6.6, that's 8.1% with taxes. You add that to the 93.5%, you're up to 101.6. So basically, you're mandating a loss of 1.6% in this bill. Could you please comment on that?
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Dave Coons, Madam Chair, Senator. The House addressed that and added the taxes and added the assessments, and that, I believe, would address your problem on making sure those are counted.
Mr. Coons, we're not acting on a House file here.
Oh, I'm saying we could take that provision and add the taxes and assessments in an amendment.
Madam Chair, Mr. Coons, even if you took the 1.5 off, you're still mandating a loss and not an earning at all. And so this is a very heavy-handed approach, I think, to the health care plans.
Any other questions? Senator Prettner-Sullen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Erickson-Ropes, I'm for transparency also, and I think that the legislative auditor's recommendations that we passed a couple of years ago is helping us in that direction. But I'm afraid that what you're putting on here now is only going to increase the cost of health care, and we don't need that occurring at this point. I think we got some very clear information about how definitions will help us in identifying what are administrative costs, and perhaps that's the direction we should go. But I can't support your bill as it's written right now.
Madam Chair, if I could respond.
Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Prettner-Sullen, to your point about increasing the cost of health care, that only will happen if you imagine the health plans as a black box that we pour these billions of dollars into, and then they keep their profitability margins and pass on the cost to the providers and the consumers. You know, if what we're trying to get at is some of the costs being expended or what happens to that money when we turn it over to the health plans. And if you look at another piece that I passed out to you, has to do, and it's to Senator Rosen's point, too, wondering about the profitability margins. It seems like they're doing very well.
Senator Erickson-Ropes, I'm glad you brought this up because this is only part of the story. And I think, you know, when we're presenting information, it's important that if we're presenting only part of the story, we say so. The reports that are issued by the Department of Health, I believe, break down all the books of business for public programs. And the only one that's listed on this sheet is the one that has been profitable. General Assistance Medical Care was still in the HMO book of business in 2008, and it had huge losses. Minnesota Care during this particular time frame had losses as well. And so I think when you're looking at how we're doing with our public dollars, whether we're paying too much or too little, you need to look at the whole thing.
Madam Chair.
Senator Prettner-Sullen.
And just a response, Madam Chair, to Senator Erickson-Ropes is just changing the accounting process from NAIC to GAAP is going to be a cost of business. So that is going to increase the cost of health care also.
So do we have a motion or an amendment or anything?
I'd like a roll call, Madam Chair.
Are you making a motion?
Or a roll call?
Are you making
the
bill?
We have to have a motion. Oh, I'm sorry. We have a roll call on the motion.
Thank you. I move that Senate File 2986 be recommended to pass.
Madam Chair.
Senator Prettner-Sullen.
Madam Chair, I move that we table this bill because I don't think it's ready for us to take action on.
That would be a higher motion. Did you want a roll call vote on that too?
No, ma'am.
No? All right. Those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
I believe the motion does prevail.
Thank you.
Senator Torres Ray.
Oh, that was kind of anticlimactic. An hour and a half.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to present my bill. It seems like this is a much simpler proposition. Madam Chair and members, you probably recall that I presented this bill a few weeks ago now in the Policy Committee, and it had a fiscal note attached to it. This is a revision.
Actually, we got the bill last year.
And last year,
this
too.
This bill is from last year. And so
it's been
it wasn't
floating
even
around
on my radar screen, and then somebody called us and said, were we going to hear the bill? And I said, well, if there's a way to do it without having a fiscal note, so apparently that is what you have been able to do.
That's correct, Madam Chair. So we put an amendment, which is the delete all amendment. I believe you have it in front of you,
yes,
which would not have a fiscal
amendment.
Note.
Senator Laurie, do you want to move the amendment for?
Yeah, I'll move the
Senator
delete
Laurie
all.
Senator Laurie will move the amendment. Do you want to explain the amendment, Senator Torres Ray? Do you want to explain the amendment?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Basically, Madam Chair, what this is to ask the commissioner to put some guidelines to include recommendations for protective health actions and follow-up services. And the reason we don't have a fiscal note here is these guidelines that will be...
We have one on the House bill, which I assume is the same amendment that you're offering.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
So
this is the same language
note
that is in the House. Correct. Yes, Madam Chair. And again, this language explicitly indicates that the revised guidelines must be implemented to the extent possible using available resources. So that's why, after receiving the fiscal note from the House, I ask that you please consider hearing this in the Senate and ask for your support.
Is there any question or discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion is adopted. Are there any questions on the bill now or the fiscal note? And I guess the question that I have is, with the changes that are made and the new fiscal note, are we actually going to make some more progress in terms of reducing blood lead levels?
Could you please address this? I have a witness that can hopefully answer that question, Madam Chair.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm Samuel Yaman, public health scientist with Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, MCEA. And this amended version of the legislation actually takes another step back and doesn't tell Department of Health what the guidelines should be, but actually instructs the agency to convene a meeting of the appropriate experts in lead poisoning prevention, medical experts, local governments that do this work, and also other nonprofit firms that do the lead abatement work. So it actually really just calls for convening a meeting of experts to determine what would be the best way to handle these relatively lower levels of children's lead exposure that are now shown by science again and again to be harmful and hazardous to children's health and development. So we would then wait and see what the agency and these experts decide is the best way to go.
Mr. Yaman, I believe it also says that they have to, by January 1st of 2011, revise the clinical and case management guidelines.
Madam Chair, that's correct. It sets a timeline on when the agency and these experts should come to a decision on how to handle these lower blood lead levels that, again, are now known to be hazardous. But beyond setting a guideline, it leaves the decision on what to do, how to protect children, up to the agency and these experts. So, again, in my view, the legislative authors, Senator Torres Ray and Representative Dabney, have taken a step back and are going to let the agency and the experts figure out how to handle this within that time frame that you just described.
Are there other questions? Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Torres Ray, on line 1.13, you've specified the Minneapolis Public Health Department and other public health departments. Was your intent that all public health departments would be consulted, or who's other public health departments? Anybody that wants to?
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, absolutely. It is mentioned in there other public health departments. One of the issues that is clear is that we have a high concentration of old housing in Minneapolis, and they've been trying to figure out, you know, where to go. So they have some expertise that they can offer. That's one of the reasons for why we named Minneapolis, so that we can build on the lessons they have learned. But that very definitely the intent here is that they will be there will be others, of course, included in the process.
Any further questions or discussions? Senator Rose.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Torres-Ray, it says in the assumptions on the fiscal note that significant costs will occur to health plans as a result of additional screening, follow-up, and education. Health plan costs are not quantified here. Is there somebody from the health plans that would like to speak in whole? Are they in favor of this legislation and ready to absorb the expenses?
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, again, we specifically put the language in here to make sure that there is some guidelines included in this. It is our understanding that we need to start really with young babies, because you know, 5 milligrams is high for a young baby. So there will be there is an assumption here that when these guidelines become available, all of these factors as to, you know, the age of a baby, areas, what kind of level of intervention needs to occur, and to what extent, that's something that they can manage and do. So that question that you raise, Senator Rosen, is a question that will come up, and then they will have to provide kind of an answer, and then we will come back next year to say, you know, it seems that we have a high volume of these age children, babies, newborns, whatever it is that they come up with, and then provide that recommendation to us so that we can figure out, you know, if there is a cost associated with that, how do we handle that, how do we pay for that. There might be some areas where, you know, we have to pay attention to that. I don't know if there is anybody here that could, from the Department of Health, that could respond.
Yes, there is someone standing up.
Okay.
Mr. Griffith, did you want to come up to the table, or is there someone else that wants to come up and comment about Senator Rosen's question?
You were looking for somebody from the health plans, and we were all out discussing the previous piece of legislation. But if the question was whether or not there would be an increase in health care costs if the requirement was changed to lower it from 10 to 5, yes, I assume that would be an extra cost, and that would be built into the rates as DHS made those changes.
Would there also be some offsetting savings because young children would have their blood levels caught and reduced earlier so that developmental delays would not occur?
Madam Chair, I assume there would be those kinds of savings, but I don't know that they would accrue to the health plans. They might accrue to the educational system and criminal justice system and other areas, but I certainly don't want to be suggesting to the committee that we are not in favor of testing in an appropriate fashion.
Are there any other questions?
Madam Chair, I guess I should have said my name is Phil Griffin. I was called in on behalf of my clients, Preferred One and UCARE, but also talking for the Council of Health Plans. So my apologies, we were up until 2 in the morning over in the house and back at 8, and I'm a little bit discombobulated today. Thank you.
All right. That's fine. Any other questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Does anyone else want to testify on the bill? Okay. Somebody want to make a motion? Senator Olson?
I'd move that Senate file, so we are
522
be
as amended,
be recommended to pass and referred to the floor?
Go to finance.
To the full finance committee.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Members.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Camille. Thank you, members.
I know that a couple of you have indicated that you're not going to be here tomorrow. We are desperately trying to get the bill done. So if we are able to tomorrow, what I would like to do is to make the spreadsheet public and go through it. but not adopt it. Wait till Monday to do that, and then do the bill language on Monday as well. Is that acceptable to everyone?
What time tomorrow, Madam Chair?
Well, I'm not exactly sure. I wish I was.
What time?
I would.
She didn't say.
I would guess maybe 9 o'clock.
Madam Chair, what can you give us some guidance? When would be the appropriate time to take amendments? Would that be tomorrow or on Monday?
On Monday. We would not be taking action tomorrow. We would just make the spreadsheet public and go through it, explain it, and we would wait. And of course, your staff would have it then. And then we would wait to take action on the spreadsheet until Monday, and then we would act on the language on Monday. And so Monday would be the time for amendments.
Madam Chair?
Senator Prettner-Solon?
I'm not sure what 9 o'clock referred to. Was it to the...
What time we might start?
On Monday or tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Okay.
That was AM.
Well, what about Monday?
Monday, I think we're going to have to start at 8:30.
I have a conflict.
If we're voting on the spreadsheet, I mean, there might be questions from people who weren't here when we go through it, and then to go through the language, I think we'll have to be at 8:30.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fischbach?
Madam Chair, so that would be Monday would be the day that we are dealing with the entire omnibus health.
In this division, I certainly hope so. You know, if nothing else goes wrong.
And Madam Chair, there will be no votes tomorrow given.
No, there would not be.
Will there be testimony?
Is that acceptable to you, Senator Fischbach?
Madam Chair, I appreciate that because last Thursday during the DFL convention, we didn't meet on Thursday. And
well, I understand that it was not being held in the same city we are in. First of all, my understanding is that the convention doesn't start till noon, and so I thought we could meet, you know, for an hour or two in the morning. I'm sorry if you assumed we would not have a meeting. It's just because we need to get done. You know, we need to get done.
And Madam Chair, just one other question. Is the language will not be available till Monday, but the spreadsheet will be available tomorrow?
That's what I'm hoping for. Is that okay with you, Senator Wilson?
Well, Madam Chair, mm-hmm. Are we going to be expected to vote on the bill on Monday if we're not getting the language until Monday?
Well, usually the language is only about the items that are on the spreadsheet. So in the past, that's what we've done. We voted on the spreadsheet, and then we've come back and done the language later.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess...
You could have it before Monday if it's available, Senator, but I don't know if it'll be available or not. Senator Lynch.
And Madam Chair, I think... By and large, the language, many of the pieces are these amendments that we've been discussing, you know, for the the previous three or four meetings. And so to a large extent, much of the language, it won't necessarily be the first time that we've seen the language or had the discussion.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm assuming that there are going to be some cuts in the bill. And that it's not, you know.
Yes, I would assume so, too.
Well, I understand that. And
they will also be reflected on the spreadsheet. And we would not be voting on the spreadsheet tomorrow. We would be voting on it on Monday, so you'd have all weekend to ponder it. Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, hypothetically, when the spreadsheet comes out and if there's a particular item on there that poses a question or is problematic to someone, I guess
the difficulty there is, if not that, then what? So that kind of helps. That's kind of how I look at it anyway.
All right. Is that clear enough?
Thank you.
All right. With that, the meeting today is adjourned.
We're not coming back today.
So,
yes,
a note.
All right.
Oh,
we haven't had this much fun for a long time.
I need to meet with him right now so that I can.